And we are back with episode 761 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Washington Heights. And what do you know? Maybe there will be a little Marvel cross-pollination going on.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm still getting used to that Washington Heights, just like everyone else's. I'm just saying that insurance might be the way to go for superheroes in the future.
And, well, it's been a really long year, guys, and it's going to get a little bit longer. And at the same time, it's going to get a little bit more creative in terms of how adaptations are handled. I'll just leave it at that for right now. We'll find out what I meant by that very shortly. But we are going to be... We're getting towards the end of the year here, folks, as we are about, halfway into December, not even. Close enough, though. So we're kind of getting towards the end, towards our usual holiday break. And as you can probably tell, we are kind of picking up shows as we can, under circumstances as we can. And, well, we're doing our weekly recording in chunks this time. So tonight we're going to be doing our new show, and that means that we're going to kick off the week with some really interesting news bites. But first, before we do any more of that, Edmund, if you could please.
As always, our intention is to spoil you silly. As always, when it's the news, we hope you are pleased. I'll tell you about episodes when we get to them, which I don't think is going to be tonight.
Probably not. At least from our perspective. For you guys, it'll probably be, you know, next show, which means, you know, Wednesday. But at any rate, before we get down that rabbit hole, let's go ahead and start with some news segments here. And we can start off with some news out of NBC. Gary?
Oh, yes. This news story, as a comic book fan, really surprised me. And I'm looking forward to it. Now, NBC has been, I don't know if late to jump on the comics bandwagon, but after... After Constantine, we all sort of threw our hands up with that network and wasn't expecting much. But they've come back with something. It's not quite superheroes, but it's awfully close. They've announced a new show that's going to premiere, and it's the title of it is Powerless. It's a comedy about ordinary folks who work for an insurance agency in the DC universe. It basically has to deal with, yes, the exciting topic of insurance agents that are picking up the pieces after superhero battles. It's going to be, they call it the first comedy series set in the universe of DC Comics. Vanessa Hudgens of High School Musical fame plays Emily, a spunky young insurance adjuster specializing in regular people coverage against damages caused by crime-fighting superheroes. It's when she stands up to one of these superheroes that she accidentally becomes a cult hero in her own right, even if it's just to her group of quirky coworkers. Now, while she navigates the normal everyday life of an insurance agent, against an explosive backdrop, Emily might just discover that being a hero doesn't always require superpowers. If this sounds a little familiar to you, Marvel dabbled with this back in the early 90s with a group called Damage Control, which wasn't so much insurance so much as the actual construction people who had to patch up buildings, holes, windows, and sidewalks from superhero battles. So I'm not sure how tongue-in-cheek they're going to go with this. I really hope they do mention it's comedy, so I'm hoping they go... crazy with it. This might even be my chance to finally see Booster Gold on the big screen. He seems like a nice fit. But we'll have to see what superheroes. And they do mention that they're going to, you are going to see a superhero, but don't expect Superman or Batman. But I'm, like, as I said, I'm hoping for, someone that'll definitely be humorous to, play off the premise of this comedy. I think it's sort of nice to see this done in a fun way as we sort of see, I guess, small heroes, or in some cases, no heroes, pervading itself through the Marvel Netflix universe as opposed to the Marvel movie universe. I like to think of this as the same thing. It's sort of a ground level looking up at the heroes rather than being one of them. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it does look like it could actually give a little bit of a... what's the word for it? I guess just a different look to the superhero universe.
Everyman, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for some reason, for me, looking at that those cast shots, I mean, one thing that immediately popped into my head is if they can get anything close to the dynamic of Brooklyn Nine-Nine in terms of the team and the quirkiness. You know, I'm not expecting them to reach the heights of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but if they get in that neighborhood, that would be good. And also, it should be mentioned that the cast is looking pretty impressive, since you do have Danny Putty from Community and Alan Tudyk as the manager. So hopefully he doesn't unexpectedly die in one of the superhero smash-ups.
That's right.
Too early. That's too early to make that judgment. It's too early to make that judgment.
Or that joke.
Too soon. Definitely
too soon. Yes, too soon. All right, so from there we can move over to a different network, in this case ABC.
Yes, and this is more news from the upcoming Marvel's The Inhumans over on ABC. This time, not about IMAX and possible screenings, but they have actually signed a showrunner and executive producer, and they have actually snapped up the showrunner from Iron Fist over on Netflix, Scott Buck. He also notably served as showrunner on the final three seasons of Dexter over on Showtime. Also worked on 6 Feet Under. Certainly some good genre cred, even if those final seasons of Dexter weren't necessarily the best, but I still lay that at Showtime's feet. As we have been mentioning ad infinitum, yes, the first two episodes are going to debut in IMAX theaters and then on the network later on. All of us here still haven't decided if we're going to go see it in IMAX or if we're going to wait for the full version on TV, but refer to previous weeks for the full story on that.
I'm sure we'll all advise before that time comes. We've got, 9 months before we have to make a decision?
Yes.
And there's this other thing that happens around that same time of year that I can't seem to put my finger on it, but it might interfere.
Yes.
Just thinking.
Well, and unless they realize that, wait a minute, there are IMAX venues in that city.
This is true.
It might make sense to combine the two, but that might just be too much synergy for them.
Might be too much. All right. Well, as we move on to the cable world, there's some news regarding the premiere of Legion, the X-Men themed drama, which is FX's first foray into the Marvel Universe. Coming from the mastermind of Fargo, Noah Hawley, and starring Dan Stevens as David Haller, the troubled young man who may be more than human. Diagnosed as schizophrenic, he has been in and out of psychiatric hospitals for years, but after a strange encounter with a fellow patient, he's confronted with the possibility that the voices he hears and visions might be real. Well, as it turns out, that particular show is going to be debuting on Wednesday, February the 8th, in the 10 o'clock time slot. So, there we are.
Very good.
Just one of a metric butt-ton of shows premiering in January through March. As if we didn't have enough on the list already. Some culling may be required. Just saying.
Yeah.
Be forewarned. But yes, that one in particular, I'm at least interested to see what it starts out to look like. Because Legion has always been one of those characters in the X-Universe that it really depends a lot on what the treatment is. To be perfectly honest. So if it's good, then maybe we'll have to watch it. But if it starts off really rough, it may just fall apart.
Yeah.
We'll see. All right, that means that we can move over to some news that Edmund, I know in particular, is really looking forward to.
Well, I'm looking forward to it when it becomes real news, but this is one of those articles where...
When it's perhaps fully realized?
Yeah, this is news about Westworld. As I believe we did report last week, it has been renewed for season two, we have now gotten a sort of confirmation that, yes, it will definitely be not coming back until 2018, but this is in the form of a tweet from Jeffrey Wright after the finale aired, saying, "See y'all in Westworld 2018, baby." This is more just confirming the speculation out of HBO that they would be taking a little bit more production time on it, but we still don't know exactly when in 2018 that is going to happen. I am certainly still hoping for early 2018.
Telling you right now, if they wait
too
long into 2018, I may just have to stage a revolt.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. All right. So that having been done, unfortunately, we have to wait a little bit longer. I'm hoping that the prediction that many made, which is, hey, this is the December when the show, the first season is ending. So how much, you know, if it's a couple months later, what's the big deal?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's the correct interpretation. So, okay, let's see. What is next on the list?
Well, we have fiction from the Sci-Fi Network. I know, I'm starting to get used to it, too. Sci-Fi has announced a 13-episode series that's going to begin production early next year and premiere later in the year that centers around the Mosley family, owners of the only funeral home in a fictitious town on the outskirts of New Orleans, and keepers of the town's dark secrets and history. Known for its haunted houses, elevated graveyards, odd town folk, and rich history of unusual phenomena, the town is also a landing patch for the world's dark manifestations of fear, guided into the world by an ancient and mysterious malefactor known as the Dredge. This series is coming from Accelerator Media's Barry Gordon, as well as Mario Van Peebles, who will also write, direct, and star in some of the episodes. Joel Anderson Thompson, formerly of Battlestar Galactica, is set as the showrunner, with Lawrence Andreas from Alias and 6 Feet Under also on board as executive producer. Other than Mario Van Peebles, no other talent has been announced at the moment, but they're looking forward to this, and I guess I really have to have a sense that these 13 episode seasons are the start really feeling like the norm anymore.
I'm really interested in the fact that it's getting a series order.
Yeah, it's...
But I guess Sci-Fi still hasn't quite gotten to the point where they are... they'd rather see a pilot first, but okay. You'd think they would have learned their lesson a couple times. Aftermath. Sorry. It's got a little, bad writing in my throat there.
Not to mention Flash Gordon back in the day.
Oh, yeah. But at any rate... Yeah, that's interesting. It's got a... I don't know about the premise. We'll see. But they've been doing really good at, for the most part, at taking some of these kind of seemingly bland premises and making them actually work, like Van Helsing, for instance. All right. Now, some people may forget that J.J. Abrams actually has something to do with Westworld.
Yes.
I haven't forgotten. Jonathan Nolan does get a lot of the credit, and for good reason.
Yes.
But Abrams does have his fingers in that particular pot as well. And it seems like he's going to continue that that relationship with HBO. It turns out that The Hollywood Reporter is saying that he's reteaming with HBO to produce a new sci-fi series called Glare. It's still in the early stages, so there's not a whole lot of detail available, but... According to this particular article, it's going to be an hour-long sci-fi drama exploring the colonization of another planet. Nice and detailed, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Abrams would be producing, along with Javier Gulan, who will be writing both the pilot and executive producing the series. The reports so far don't specify if he'll write the entire series, or at least the first season, or be serving as showrunner for the series. It's based off an original idea by Gulan, and it comes from a blind development deal between him and Bad Robot, which is, of course, Abrams' production company. So, essentially, that's as much information as we have right now. A lot of people are taking this as a good sign, with Westworld serving as the current example of what HBO can do with sci-fi, and there are many who are crossing their fingers that Jonathan Nolan's proposed Foundation series could also come to HBO. Yes, please.
Yep.
Nolan on Foundation? You can't really get better than that, right?
Yes, definitely.
Now, the best part about it is that where I found this particular article was it was kind of linked to secondhand, and the one comment on the original post that linked to this was basically saying Abrams hasn't done anything of value. And I said, really? Did you read the article? It clearly points out Westworld, which is one of the highest rated shows in HBO history. But that's okay. That's all right. I can understand it. They probably didn't get past the first episode without getting confused. Anyway, might be taking a slight umbrage. Mm-hmm. I think that would be great. If we look at what HBO has done for fantasy and for sci-fi in the last few years, they've definitely upped the game. And why shouldn't we give them more to play with? I would be quite happy to have Abrams and Nolan expand their playground or sandbox. As you will. Perhaps they can build a new narrative.
Yes, I think
I'm just saying.
Yes, I think it might be quite compelling now that I've wrapped my head around. It's like, you know, okay, how did this guy manage to sell a series called Glare to Mr. Lensflare?
Mm-hmm. That hadn't been lost on me either, but yes. I figured I'd give you guys a softball. Moving over to the comics world, Gary, I'm just going to start here.
Oh, yes, and this surprised the heck out of me, honestly, and it's a bit of a longer article than we typically handle, but very informational nonetheless. You know, just as a little premise, I had always thought the X-Men were going to start to go the way of the Fantastic Four. Marvel didn't own the rights, so they want to kill everyone off, and it seemed like they were doing that. They've in the past year or so, they've managed to kill off Cyclops, Professor X, and I believe Magneto as well. So it's not looking good, as well as the release of the Terrigen Mist Cloud Terrigen Mist of Inhuman note has been killing off mutants left and right. There's very few of them left. So it seemed like Marvel really had it in for them. However, they have recently announced that they are redrafting many of the X-Men books, and they'll be coming out with, I believe it's about five new books starting from scratch with the X-Men. They're going to have a special issue called X-Men Prime that's going to kick off the reset of this. Now, it's not a from scratch reset, but more moving forward. They're going to return and have two X-Men books called X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue. Those of longtime comic book reading will be familiar with the names of those teams, as the X-Men had split into those teams back in the mid-90s, and they're bringing the concept back. The Gold team will be the older established heroes, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Storm, Kitty Pryde. In a twist of time, Old Man Logan, they're not calling him Wolverine, just Old Man Logan, will be there, as well as Rachel Gray, who they're trying out new code names with her again, calling her now Prestige. They gave up with Kitty Pryde. They gave up with Kitty Pryde trying to give her names, and maybe they'll eventually give up with Rachel. We'll just have to wait and see. Nevertheless, for now, Prestige. Good luck. The second book, X-Men Blue, is going to deal with, and it's too long a story even for us right now here, for the younger version of the original X-Men team. We're talking about Jean Grey, Warren Worthington, Scott Summers, and Hank McCoy as teenagers. Imagine the early X-Men issues back when they were in their old black and yellow uniforms. While they're not wearing those uniforms, that's the type of sort of universe these guys have came from. They're not the battle-hardened apocalypse-tested people that we've come to be used to. They're much younger heroes. Obviously, they're trying to, you know, attract a slightly younger demographic. And the storylines have been reasonably good. It's the contrast between the older and the younger characters has been very insightful at times, and I've enjoyed the storylines. So I don't know if they're going to continue to do that, but nevertheless, that's the next one.
If you're confused by this, as comic readers out there, just hear the word Bendis, and that's all you need to know.
Fair enough. However, I do enjoy the younger.
I do. It's just definitely one of his more controversial things that he's done in recent years.
Yes. Well, they did a similar thing with my favorite group of heroes, the Legion of Superheroes, many years ago, where they ran a adult book, so to speak, and a younger book with clones. So I've seen it work well, and I've seen it work poorly, and I feel they've been doing a good job with these younger X-Men at the moment. So we'll have to see. Not to be outdone by any of the major teams, they're also relaunching Generation X, starring Jubilee and a bunch of students, very young students. And that will be and they're basing that roughly off Grant Morris's run from the early 2000s. And they're supposed to be sort of outcasts that are, you know, trying to learn to use their powers. Those books have been very inconsistent for me, but hopefully they'll put a good twist on it, and we'll have to give it a try. The next new books that's announced is Iceman. They mentioned that Iceman is getting his first solo series ever. However, he did have a mini series at one point, but I guess that doesn't count. Anyway, the series is going to explore Bobby as one of the original five X-Men, who really hasn't done much, or at least he's not as notarized as, say, Cyclops or Phoenix. And so they're going to dive into him. They're also going to dive into the fact that even though he may not be as flashy, he's actually still an Omega-level mutant, that his powers are much stronger than we assume at this at this time. After all, he has reconstructed himself back from water. He replaced limbs all by himself. We might belittle his ice power, but I think it goes a little bit deeper than some writers usually take advantage of. Next up, start going a little bit quicker with this, is a new Jean Grey book, and this is with that one of the younger groups of from that younger group of X-Men. So the Iceman was the older group. This Jean Grey book is from the newer, younger Jean Greys, and she's preparing because she has a sense that the Phoenix is going to come back to this alternate Jean Grey now, and she's trying to get ready to handle that. So we'll have to see how that turns out. But some of the artwork looks very nice for it, so we'll have to see. And last but not least, they've announced that they are bringing back Cable to his own book, and they're going to put it back in the time-traveling realm where he's jumping back and forth to prevent a villain named Conquest from altering history to his benefit. So this is being written by James Robinson, who's done really good works over the years, including some of the Squadron Supreme books lately, and some earlier Justice Society of America books as well. So he does have a sense of different time areas. And this one I'm really looking forward to. I know we all sort of wince sometimes and remember the Rob Liefeld days of Cable, but I've always felt that the character himself has a really great backstory, and even his current story of where he came from and his sort of purpose was always good, just not always handled correctly. So I have a really good sense that James Robinson can do good by him on this one, so we'll have to look forward. So far be it from the X-Men's demise from the Marvel Universe, it looks like they're coming back pretty strong.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm glad that rumors to the contrary, it looks like the X-Men are going to be around for a while and are getting good treatment, let us say. And quite frankly, I know that it's scaled back a bit, perhaps, from what people are used to. But what I think they need to do, and they probably need to do this across the board, but they're never going to, but they really kind of need to, is to just scale back, strip it down a bit.
I need 11 X-Men books every month.
No, yeah. you have like 2 billion Avengers books right now. So, I mean, I really feel like they throw everything at the wall to see what will stick. It almost feels like they are in a in a financial mode where volume is king, and the more they can push out, even at a very small margin, is better. At least that's the attitude that I seem to feel that we're getting from the big houses right now. So I like this idea of a somewhat stripped down X-Men universe. That is, of course, if we don't wind up having like 17,000 Wolverine books, but we didn't hear about that. So let's see what happens.
They're down to 2, John. Cut them slack.
Okay. I'll give them a little bit. Edmund, it's not just the X-Men that seem to be getting a little bit of a kick in the near future.
Yes, indeed. Marvel also announced that they will be launching a new Iron Fist series in March, of all things. Yes, time to coincide with the release of Iron Fist on Netflix. This will be brought to us by Ed Brisson and Mike Perkins. Brisson was interviewed over on Marvel.com and said the book would be following up on themes introduced in the Immortal Iron Fist and also in Iron Fist the Living Weapon, saying, right now, Kunlun is in ruins, and since the city is the source of Danny's powers, that's going to affect him and his ability to be Iron Fist. Danny's whole identity is wrapped up in being Iron Fist, so we'll be following him as he fights to hold on to something that's slipping away, desperately trying to figure out how to hold on to it. Okay, gotcha. So he's going to be going off to Liu Shi, a mysterious island with ties to Kunlun, facing off against many different masters with different martial arts specialties. So lots of the usual Iron Fist martial arts action, it seems.
Very interesting and very timely. All right, now I apologize in advance for any mispronunciations might come out of my mouth in this next one, but I just can't let this one go.
Yes, of course.
Funimation licenses the second season of Attack on Titan. That's right, everyone who has been waiting about 4 years for this crap.
Yes,
you mean it really
finally
exists.
Be getting it. Funimation announced on Thursday that it has licensed the second season of the anime based on Hajime Isayama's Attack on Titan manga. It will premiere in April 2017 in Japan, only about 2 years after it was supposed to. The new season was initially announced in November 2014. and then originally slated for 2016, as I just said. So this is going back a ways. Tetsuro Araki, the director of the first anime season, is acting as the chief director on the second season. And episode director Masashi Koizuka, is taking over as director. Many of the other main staff members are returning from the first season. WIT Studio is again producing the animation, and the main cast is also returning. The first season was 25 episodes long and aired back in 2013. Of course, since then, we've had some spin-offs and so forth, a few novels, a two-part live-action film project, something else that's in the works that Edmund's going to tell us about in a little bit, which I can't believe is happening. But, hey, we are finally getting the second season of Attack on Titan.
Yay!
Finally.
Thanks.
Hopefully, there won't be a four-year gap between seasons two and presumably three, but I'll just be happy with what we're going to get, because if it runs as long as the first season did, then it should pretty much be the majority of the spring into summer.
Yep.
Yay.
Definitely.
All right, but that's not the only amount of Attack on Titan that we may be getting in the near future.
Yes, as John mentioned, trying to fill the void before that second season, they've come up with all sorts of adaptations, and it has now been revealed that Attack on Titan will also be adapted as a stage play next summer. The announcement was made on the jacket band of the 21st manga volume, and promises that the Titans, soldiers, and that battle will appear in a way no one has seen before. For those who have wondered just how you do this 3D stuff in real life, perhaps we will get to see it, and perhaps in a less tongue-in-cheek fashion than the live-action film did.
What I want to know is, who are they going to cast as Captain Levi?
Of course.
Peter Dinklage, maybe?
Oh, you went there before I could.
just had to. Warwick Davis? I don't know.
Yes.
I can make fun of him. I cosplay him. All right. Let's see. Next on the list, as we are still reeling from the happiness that is all of this Attack on Titan news, and boy, if you're following the manga right now, you also know that the truth about this world is so much different than we thought it was. But we are moving into the gaming world, where we're about to get something really exciting. Gary?
Yes, and yet more news about this format. It's been announced that the Telltale series is releasing another episode of Batman. They're calling it, of course, Batman the Telltale series, Guardian of Gotham. This fourth installment in this series sees Penguin taking control of Wayne Enterprises, and the Arkham Asylum now has a new guest, Bruce Wayne. With Batman, or Bruce Wayne, removed from the streets of Gotham City, Harvey Dent's forces and the Children of Arkham are at war with innocent citizens caught in the crossfire. To escape the comforts of your padded room, you must choose allies to aid in your escape, even if they aren't the sort to put a smile on your face. Just how far will Bruce Wayne be willing to go for justice? For vengeance? What now, Dark Knight? Here's the official launch trailer. Oh, sorry.
This article is a little bit crazy. That was actually for the fourth episode, which is out right now. This particular article is saying also that the final episode of this particular series is going to be released on the 13th of December, which is the day after this episode goes out. So if you're like me and you're playing this already, you're going to get the finale before Christmas. Just a couple weeks before they start the third season of The Walking Dead game.
Hmm.
I'm excited.
So you're saying we should invest in
Telltale? Yeah, absolutely. That's not the only excitement that we have right now. And Edmund, I'll give you this one because I tried with the pronunciations already.
Okay. This is news from Sony at the keynote for the PlayStation Experience 2016 event. Debuted a new trailer for Ni No Kuni 2, Revenant Kingdom, from Bandai Namco Entertainment and Level 5. It's a PS4 role-playing game, and trailer confirmed the game will debut next year. Let's see. There was the head of Level 5, Akihiro Hino, the artist, Yoshiyuki Momose, who has worked on Only Yesterday and Pompoko, and Joe Hisayashi, the longtime musical collaborator for Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli as a whole. Pretty much most of their work. I mean, they mention here Nausicaa, Princess Mononoke, and Spirited Away, but he is really their resident composer. But they are all returning to work on for the story, the general direction, the character designs, and of course the music. This is a role playing game that debuted for the PS3 in Japan in 2011. There was actually a Nintendo version in 2010, and even a phone version. Not something I was actually familiar with, but now that I know there's a sort of a Miyazaki based role playing game out there, I just might finally get me into the PlayStation universe. Who knows?
Yes, of course. I'm hoping that means that they're going to be putting out an up-resed version, perhaps, of Ni no Kuni, the original game, which I believe was on the PS2. That's how long ago it was. I may be wrong about that. It may be on the PS3. I think it's a PS3 game, excuse me, because I was trying to remember exactly when I played some of that. That one was definitely Studio Ghibli inspired. In fact, they collaborated for that original game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they are as involved in the sequel, but it is still definitely in that art style.
Oh yeah,
and storytelling style. But the first one, oh man, that was one dark, surprisingly dark game. Similar to the Ghibli style of presenting what seems to be a very fanciful and lighthearted visage.
Yes.
When the story is just a bit deeper than that.
Absolutely.
Yes, but that one was actually quite a lot of fun, and I would recommend it. Let's see here. Next on the list, we are moving down to some movie news. And, we haven't seen something like this happen before. Hopefully it will end up a little bit better. Spider-Man Homecoming 2 has been confirmed.
Two?
Yes. Two. That's right. Before we even see the very first Spider-Man Homecoming movie, we already have news that a sequel is getting locked in with a release date of the 5th of July, 2019. This is going to as it says here, this is going to cause problems for at least a year until we know what the heck they're actually going to call it. Is it going to be the actual sequel to Homecoming? Is it actually Homecoming 2? Or will it be Spider-Man 2? Wait, no, they did that. Amazing Spider... No, okay. We see the problem here. I seem to recall that they got a little bit ahead of themselves with the Amazing Spider-Man attempt at a franchise, and that was part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
They took what was very promising and kind of ran it into the ground before it even got going. So I'm hoping they don't make the same mistake here. I'm hoping they're just kind of like carving out a time like, here, second proposed sequel, but yeah. Little concerned there. It's an unproven thing as far as I'm concerned. Civil War was not enough to prove to me that Spider-Man is ready for its own franchise yet again.
Yeah.
But, we'll find out soon. The first one comes out July 2017, if I recall correctly. So, Gary, some more movie news coming out of the world of comic books.
Yes, yeah. Comics are a theme. It's been announced that Scott Snyder's and Jeff Lemire's AD series, the comic book series that comes from Image Comics, is getting a movie adaptation. It's been licensed, or at least optioned, by Sony Pictures. And just so you have a sense of what the book is, the book is set 825 years after the cure for death has been found. The comic book itself alters between actual written paragraphs and traditional comic book panels as you're flipping through the books. Jeff Lemire, as I mentioned earlier, he's the one that actually has been doing all the watercolors. So I'm not sure how they're going to approach that type of visual style moving forward in the movie. But you definitely get quite a story as well as visual imagery with it. And it's a fun read. I'm not a regular follower of it, but I have picked up a few issues. And if you want to pick up an issue to see what they're talking about, it is due in at the end of December into local comic book stores. The title of the actual series is AD After Death. And it looks promising. So we'll have to see. The concept is sort of interesting as we, you know, as people live through this never dying anymore. They have to deal with illnesses that still go on from time to time, because while you might be immortal, you still get sick. You can still run out of money. So there, you know, there are real problems that pop up in this book that you might not normally expect in a sort of a post-apocalyptic world.
It does sound intriguing, that's for sure. So we'll have to see how well that adapts, I suppose. All right, that means that we can move over to casting news. That was awfully serene.
We're getting good, is what I thought.
Yeah, All right. About the opposite of serene. Is this next film?
Yes. This is casting news from Jumanji. Tim Matheson has joined the cast alongside, of course, Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart and Jack Black and Karen Gillan and Nick Jonas, etc. Still slotted into a release date about a year from now, December 22nd, 2017, as we speak. He will be playing Old Man Vreek. Apparently that's about as much as they're letting us know. Kind of interesting to, for me, of course, having first seen Tim Matheson in Animal House, that he is now being cast as a character called Old Man Vreek. Yeah, I'm not feeling too old right now.
Did you say Reek?
Almost. Stick a V in front of that.
Damn. I was going to say, most awesome crossover yet. Make that guy the villain of that movie. Let's see how that works. All right. Next, we have some news about the second season of Colony. Those who might remember that show from the USA Network, they have tapped Laura Innes in a recurring role for the second season. The ER alumni will play Karen, whose life has been defined by loss. First, those of her husband and son during the invasion, and most recently by the loss of her daughter. She joins a great number of other second season additions to the cast. That show will be returning on Thursday, January the 12th. So there you are.
Okay.
Continuing to flesh out the cast of that particular show. All right. Next, we have some news about Timeless. Gary?
Yeah, I've been enjoying the series, so I'm glad to see that things are progressing on it. On top of the news that Timeless did get an order for three additional episodes, they've announced that Annie Wershing is going to be joining the series for a recurring role. For those not familiar with Timeless, it centers on a mysterious criminal who steals a time machine and is intent on destroying America by changing America's past. Annie Wershing will be playing Emma Whitmore, a reclusive woman hiding out in a cabin deep in the woods who is of mysterious importance to Flynn, the character played by Goran Visnjic. Gershing, you might be familiar with, starred with Kiefer Sutherland on 24 and was also a series regular on the Amazon series Bosch. That's good. They're casting nice talent for this show. That's encouraging.
Indeed it is.
And she's nice to look at, too, so extra.
This is true.
Yes.
I will not dispute that. The picture in that particular article is actually quite lovely.
Yes.
All right, Edmund. Some good news about a show that we've enjoyed in recent history.
Oh, yes. This is more casting news from 12 Monkeys for season 3. James Callis, of course, best known, particularly on the Sci-Fi Network, for playing Dr. Gaius Baltar on Battlestar Galactica, has landed a recurring role for the third season. Executive producer Terry Metalis says he will play a highly anticipated and pivotal new character to our series mythology, a rebellious and enigmatic time traveler raised throughout history by the army of the 12 monkeys, one whose conflicted personal and emotional path will change everything for James Cole and Dr. Cassandra Rayleigh. And of course, as we remember from his portrayal of Baltar in BSG, conflicted personal emotional path is something Mr. Callis can do extremely well. So this will be that much anticipated by us anyway, third season, which will find Cole and Rayleigh embarking on a desperate search across time to find the man responsible for the apocalypse, the Witness. Killing him will mean saving the world, but the journey will come at tremendous personal stakes for the two, and will call into question new alliances, old bonds, and the virtue of the mission itself. So pretty much what we've come to expect from 12 Monkeys.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's see here. What comes next? That is the question, even with 12 Monkeys. And I believe it is some news regarding the Tomb Raider reboot. Some recent news here that, the movie that is going to be starring Alicia Vikander as Lara Croft in the next reboot of the Tomb Raider franchise, the film franchise anyway, is going to be featuring Walton Goggins as the villain of the 2018 film. This is apparently someone who has been much in demand after his turns on Justified and Sons of Anarchy. So it seems like this is a good addition to the cast. There are many people who are taking this as a positive potential, anyway, turn of events, as it seems like he is in the running for the villainous.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, where they are finalizing, they're saying they're finalizing negotiations, so it seems pretty much a sure thing, but not absolutely certain yet. But I will say Justified is one of those series that I had friends keep telling me, that I should watch. I have watched most of the first season, and Walton Goggins is particularly memorable, and especially because it was one of those cases where his character was actually supposed to be killed off in the pilot, and he and Tim Oliphant played off each other so well that the producers completely reversed course and kept them around for, so far as I know, pretty much most of the series.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I don't know too much about Justified, unfortunately. It was just another show that was unable to get onto my slate, so to speak. But that is it for our actual news here. Unfortunately, we also have another example of In Memoriam. And, Gary, I figured that you would probably be a good one for this one. Hello?
Yeah, and I don't even really need the article, but I can't really be sad so much as it's, one of those times where you're glad there's people like this that have been in the world and that worked so hard and did so much during the course of their lives. And it's more to just be grateful that they were here rather than so much mourn their loss. Of course, the person we're talking about is Senator John Glenn. He passed about a week ago as we're recording this, and lived to the age of 95. And boy, did he live. We could start off with him being a fighter pilot over Korea. He was one of the original Mercury 7 astronauts. He was the one of the first people ever to go into space. After that, he was married to his wife for a remarkable 73 years. In this day and age, that's almost unheard of, but inspiring nonetheless. Then after he retired from being an astronaut, he went into politics and became a senator. He was a senator to his home state of Ohio for over 24 years. Then, as you'd think to yourself, wow, what a life and career at that point. At the age of 77, he decided that he wanted to go back up into space. He trained regularly and lobbied like mad and became the oldest person ever to go in space at the age of 77. He went back on the shuttle, I believe it was the Discovery, and did a variety of tests because there has never been tests done on older people before, always fit astronauts. So they said, hey, let's do that. So he did a lot of groundbreaking testing for senior citizens in space, and and came back and did retire from the Senate very soon after he completed that space flight, and he's been pretty much retired ever since then. But looking back on his life and what a life it is, I don't know if I can say we'd be jealous, but certainly a little envious of all he accomplished in his life. So our country was grateful was blessed to have him, and I don't know what more to say than not that I'm happy about his death, but I really would like to celebrate his life. It was quite an amazing one.
Yeah, I think that's putting it mildly. Anything that you want to add there, Edmund?
Yeah, no, I think that's very well put, Gary. I mean, much as it may be coming at the end of this unfortunate year for passings, this is definitely a life to be celebrated. And certainly, as I was growing up, following the space program and Mercury into Gemini into Apollo, he was one of our heroes. And it's no surprise that he helped inspire Tom Wolfe's phrase, "The right stuff."
yeah, I think that that's a good way to put it. And I think that another way would be Godspeed, John Glenn. So, yeah, I guess that pretty much brings our news segment, news show to an end. When we come back next time, we'll be getting into quite a bit of episodic discussion. So, till then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.